Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes, and this is the audio diary of my life behind the scenes of a YouTube creator and landowner and novelist. Funny when you give yourself all these labels, isn't it? Just an ordinary bloke at the end of the day. It's Monday the 13th of October 2025. Loud noise of motorbike going past. It is an overcast day. We've had overcast days for the last 3 or 4 days. We've had occasional sunshine last week, didn't we? Which was very lovely, seeing as Julia and I were on the land doing our thing, getting things organised. Let me just find out if Julia would like another cup of tea. Would you like another cup of tea? Oh, right, in the travel mug. Fair enough. No worries. Just going to collect the mugs, first of all. Julia's got to head back because our ex is off to work and she's obviously looking after her children today. Although I may see her a little bit later on because the boxes are going to arrive. They were supposed to arrive on Friday. These are the Biggleswick book, The Town That Wouldn't Comply. It was supposed to arrive Friday, didn't, because they had a driver down, and it happened to be the driver of my consignment. So that was a shame. However, not to worry too much. Let's just put this water in the kettle and filter some more. Sorry, just getting myself organised as ever in the Naked Englishman, as you have come to love and enjoy, or hate and endure. The thing is, I suppose if you tune into it, you know what you're going to get, and so therefore you get what you expect. Sometimes something coherent, other times not quite so. So we were over on the land yesterday and the day before, not Friday, because we were waiting for boxes that didn't materialise. We went to the farm shop, as you probably remember. Tomorrow I'm in Burgess Hill doing a talk about life, the universe and everything, and promoting Biggleswick and talking about the process, the thoughts behind it, buying the land, getting out the system, all of those sort of things. We will see how well that is received. Hopefully people might even buy a copy of the book, which would be nice, which would be very flattering, really. I wrote a children's book in 2014 called Splidge the Cragflinger, and I was asked, I don't know how it came about now, again, you know, these things sometimes just materialise, don't they? I was asked to go into a school up in London somewhere, near Heathrow, and teach writing to the young primary kids, which was a lovely thing to do. And we did workshops and we talked about writing and storytelling, which was the most important part from my perspective, you know, it's down to the teachers to do grammar and those sort of things. But it's encouraging to my job was to encourage imagination and thinking, how can you create a story and what is the elements of a story? A travel mug, she said. There we go. So that was great fun. And of course, at the end, for a fiver, I mean, it's a while ago now, well, 9 years ago, for a fiver, people, the kids could come in and buy a copy of the book. And again, I had them all printed. I forget what company printed them. It was a different company, but I can't remember who it was. But it was nice to be able to go in with a box of books. Well, I haven't got rid of them all yet. And I would happily sell those on if I could find somebody to want to purchase them. And I wrote it as a trilogy, so there are three books, but I was trying to sell the books elsewhere, you know. And I was just disillusioned, I think, because I was writing to a reasonable style. I'm not saying I'm a great writer or anything like that, but I picked up books of a similar age group, like David Walliams, and it was all about farting or poo, or it was very base material, and I thought, what a shame. Unlike the Swallows and Amazons and some of the books that I was brought up with, Tom Brown's School Days and things like that, when kids were far more able to read and understand much broader concepts than the majority of children today. And that, if that's not evidence that, you know, when was, it was a Victorian thing, wasn't it? Tom Brown's School Days. Swallows and Amazons, when was that written? In the 30s or 40s? And those sort of things, Toad of Toad Hall, these had interesting concepts in them, not just farting and pooing, and or just complete and utter downright fantasy, you know. I was writing about social issues and I was adding historical elements within this story that would, I hoped, would introduce ideas to people, even though it was, you know, for children. But no publisher was interested, of course. And again, it's another area, like television, like the music industry, that is sewn up that you had to bow and scrape to these people. And you had to write what they wanted to write. The other thing, of course, was the other books were very, very woke. The teenage books. And that was just ghastly, looking at that content to, because you had, obviously I was looking at what the marketplace had and what was selling. So in the end, I gave up, which was a real shame, because I wish I, you know, had carried on. But the flame was reinvigorated in last year, writing Biggleswick. And it was a very joyous experience. I started writing a pipe-smoking book. Well, in the end, it was a novel about somebody who enthused on pipe-smoking and used to be a tobacconist and all those sort of things, and has his own in adventures in life. But because of Biggleswick and because of the land and because of other things, it's on halt. But I do want to get back to that, although God knows where the time will come from. But again, I'm very much not wishing to put it on places like Amazon. Because unless one makes that stand and says, you know, let's not just give all our rights and our money away to the big corporations. Let's stand our ground and be independent. But people don't want to do that. There's an author friend of mine who says, but I wouldn't be able to make any money if I didn't do that. And that is the bad situation to be in. Again, I mean, I suppose it's the YouTube situation. All right, my love, I put your drink within your travel mug. Do you want me to do anything? Yeah. Righto. The bag to go upstairs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry about that slight interruption there, Julia. I had to suddenly rush back because her ex needed to go to work, and he hadn't told her what time, which is very inconvenient. Otherwise she would have been back so that she can take on the parenting duties. I mean, she would have gone back anyway, but not necessarily at 7:30 in the morning if he doesn't need to go to work at night, you know. Anyway, back into the house to finish that cup of tea, and I can't remember now what I was waffling on about, so it's not really relevant, but I wanted to ensure that I finished The Naked Englishman, such as it is. Yes, writing books and things like that. Anyway, yes, it's a funny old time, isn't it? But I hope, I mean, the plan, long-term plan, let's say, is to write more, and I would like to write more books if people buy this one, if people find this one interesting. And they might not. They might say it's a load of rubbish. They might say you can't write for toffee. You know, all of those sort of things. How do you know unless you try? And I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's never to be put off. A lot of people will put you off and say, oh, what, write a book? Oh, gosh, you wouldn't be able to do that. And that's fair enough. You know, that might be their opinion. But one, and they're welcome to voice their opinion. Of course they can. But it's whether you take that opinion. You go, well, unless you try something. And people don't like seeing people give different things or challenging things, do they, a go? People may be saying about Julia and I taking on the land and think, gosh, but you're not farmers, or you have no experience, or you're too old, or, you know, you've got one eye, or it's too dangerous, or a myriad of reasons not to do things, which is very strange. I understand that people, perhaps they're talking about themselves, and I often think that's the case. Because they don't really know us, they see a persona on the screen, which isn't put on, but it is a small snippet of what we are. They don't live here 24/7, and they don't live in my skin. So they don't really know. And they don't know the thoughts and wishes and the experiences, the background. They may have a smattering of it. And because of that, I think mostly those people who are naysayers are really talking about themselves. I really do think that. I think, and that's how I treat them. When they say, oh, no, you can't do it, or you shouldn't do this, or you know, they're talking about themselves thinking, and that's how I see it. They're saying, I couldn't do what you're doing. I can't do it. I live a very small and simple life, or whatever, you know. I wouldn't risk it. I'm not going to do it. Well, that's fine. I don't have any problem with that. But unless you give something a whirl, where is the sense of adventure? There's a huge sense of adventure for Julia and I. And when you think it's only a small plot of land, it's not 1,000 acres. We haven't got massive tractors. We haven't got to plant acres and acres of barley or oats or things like that that's going to processing plants. We're not doing that. We are connected with the earth. We're experimenting. We're trying. We're learning. And we're outside and we're with nature. And it's joyous. And I mean, the most important part is we love it. We love it. And when people say, oh, perhaps you're too old, or you're too ugly, or you're too long, or too short, or you're too this, or too that, or you couldn't do it, or, you know, it doesn't make the blind bit of difference. We love it. That's the difference. We absolutely thriving doing it. Mistakes and all, we've made mistakes, and in the end we go, oh, for goodness sake. And then we laugh at it. We go, oh, well, whatever. We know how lucky we are to be where we're doing it. And the strange thing is, and this is the strange part, is if you think, go back a few hundred years, it wouldn't be luck having a little bit of land, or it wouldn't be luck that you're in the countryside with the birds and the bees and everything. It would be normal life for most people before they all left the land. I'm not saying it's easy. not saying it's simple. I'm not saying that it's not without its hardships, but it wouldn't have been lucky. It would have been the norm. And there is a sense of coming home in what we do. People may not accept that. They may say, no, that's not what it is. It's not coming home. You're going back to the caves. Well, and so what? So what? We love it. You know, at the end of the day, if you can make your life a happy existence, what argument has somebody else got? If you're not hurting anybody, if you're happy and you're enjoying it, you have very little perhaps, but you're happy. Those people who apparently seem to have everything very often don't actually seem to be happy. They've followed a path which they've been blindly told is the route to happiness and success, only to find that perhaps it isn't. And maybe they resent those who find that route to success and happiness, which is a much more organic, simple and basic life. And maybe that's what irks them so much. I don't know. It's not my problem to know. So anyway, I must get on. Thank you for listening. I will sort this out and get this up. And I will talk to you probably tomorrow.